You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
I don't think there's a skill, a DevOps skill. Usually a DevOps engineer will be, I'm a DevOps engineer and I'm dealing with AWS Lambda, or I have an expertise. I live in the DevOps group, but I have expertise. It's very similar here.
Hello, my name is Evelyn Ulrich. Welcome to the Humans of DevOps podcast today. Excited to be with a very special guest, Rami Tamir, on the topic breaking down silos, which I think is a very fantastic topic to talk through. We'll travel through a variety of topics. So Rami, thanks for being here. I'm going to do a little bit of reading to our audience about your background, but I will turn it also to you later on because there is maybe some holes you want to fill in. So first of all, Rami is the co-founder and CEO for Salto. Salto was founded in 2019. In 2021, I believe Salto was listed as one of the top 10 hottest DevOps companies. The word salto, I can say that because I speak a little Italian, means jump. So Salto Mortale, for example, right? That's a great name for a company. So congratulations. Let's talk a little bit more about Rami, what he has done. So he has 25 plus years of experience in management of multidisciplinary software development. As an entrepreneur, has a ton of proven track records on different technology companies. He was co-founder of Pentacom, which was acquired by Cisco. Qamranet, the kernel-based virtual, kernel-based virtual machines acquired by Red Hat, and Ravello Systems acquired by Oracle. There is a trend there in naming, and we'll quiz you on that a little bit. You are also an angel investment or investor in early stage startup companies in tech industries, and serve on many boards for them. You are a BSEECS, so kind of similar to me, except I don't have the EE, I have the CIS in electrical engineering from Technion, and an MBA from Northwestern University and Tel Aviv University. Welcome, Rami. Anything I missed on your background you want to share?
First of all, thanks for having me. I think it's pretty extensive. So yeah, we can move on from that.
Excellent. So Salto automates configuration of popular enterprise SaaS applications. So we're talking Salesforce, NetSuite, Marketo, and many others. And for me, as a DevOps person, sharing with our audience, it uses and leverages a variety of DevOps principles really to manage configurations. So a lot of codeless, low-code work to help BizOps to be faster, better, more proactive, et cetera, et cetera. So give us your definition and your, what is it, what does really, what does Salto actually solve?
It's pretty simple, actually. When you look at what companies are doing today to manage their, what we call business operation, we can elaborate on that later. It's done using a cluster of cloud applications, the likes of Salesforce and NetSuite and Jira and Zendesk, et cetera, et cetera. Typical company will run tens and hundreds of those. And essentially, when you get those platforms, when you sign up to this platform, you get a data scheme, you get a database, and you have to start morphing that to your business. And that work is done using no-code way of doing things. It doesn't have code. They are coding for to some extent, but mostly it's a no-code thing. So when you look at the day-to-day of people doing that, when you start a company, and I've done that a few times, as you mentioned, it's simple. You basically bring on a contractor and you do some work, and it's nice. You have maybe one admin. Things are good. When the business starts to pick up, it becomes really complex because these are mission critical applications. Because if your Salesforce stops, if your NetSuite stops, if any of those platforms stop, you have a problem. The business slows down. And when you look at the way no-code platforms are being developed, it's essentially an ad hoc process done differently from company to another, very error-prone, very manual, relies on tribal knowledge, meaning the this guy know that person knows something else. And when it becomes complex, when the business picks up and it doesn't take a lot of time, things start to break. Even the basic things, I'll give you a few examples. What is implemented? In order to understand what is implemented in the Salesforce, you have to go through a click and point and click marathon to understand what is that. How do you design review? So I have a change I want to make. What is the language that I speak to my peer in order to show them what I'm doing? Like the day-to-day thing in a development process. How do I revert a change? How do I kind of share the knowledge with someone else, et cetera, et cetera? And all of these are things that were solved in the last 2 to 3 decades very well in the software delivery and software development world. So what we're trying to do as a company is very simple. Trying to see if we can copy, not to see if you can copy, try to copy concepts from the DevOps software delivery world in there. And the first step of doing that is create a common language. Because as I said before, there is no language to speak, you know, between the two peers working on the same project. So what we did is we created an open source project. It's called Salto, you can find it in GitHub, that essentially in a very basic level, connects to those platforms using their API, their open APIs, and extract the schema or the metadata configuration, the configuration. And then we format it in what we call Knuckle, which stands for, if you want, not another configuration language or the chemical sign for salt, Salto, a lot of geeky references. But this is a glorified JSON that allows you to start doing things in a code kind of way. This is what we call it. This is why we call it company's code. Once you have textual representation or code representation of those platforms, you can start doing software-like things, mm-hmm. meaning you can put it in Git, you can create versions, you can revert changes, you can share the knowledge with someone else. You can start explore the other side of the house, if you will. And that's what we essentially do. Obviously, we go way beyond that, but that's the basic term. Having said all of that, we do not expect admins of this platform to write code. This is not what we're doing. We think no code is a great thing. It's a great thing. It's an amazing thing. What we're trying to do is once you've done your feature using your platform, Salesforce, whatever platform, you can extract that configuration. We call it discovery or fetch. And you have all of your changes codified. And once you have your changes codified, you can start doing all the process that we're used to. This is kind of a very high level description of what we do.
So that makes me think of a term. When I was at Forrester Research, we did a lot of, listening in, of course, to what Gartner had to say. And they faced this term, citizen developer, right? And ServiceNow picked up on that quite a bit. So what I hear is this really enables citizen developers or business technologists, that was our term at Forrester, to do things themselves without inhibiting or bringing in a developer and a large team to actually make whatever they need to do in terms of business processes, in terms of connections, integrations, logics, et cetera, right? Is that correct?
There's two sides to what you say here, if I'll break it down. So the no-code platforms allow any citizen developer to do that work. The problem is what happens when these changes start to accumulate and you want to have something that is efficient, that doesn't have a technical debt, that makes sense, that connect between the other system to another, because essentially all of these systems try to create one solution. And there where we come in. We'd like to, so these people create solutions. And when you create a solution, you're essentially an engineer. You're not a software developer per se, because you're not using software tools or code. But you are an engineer. We try to call them business engineers because these are people who are getting very, very complex tasks, similar to software development. They're handling mission critical application, but at the end of the day, they don't have enough tools, processes, methodology to solve those problems. if you look at what was done again in the software delivery, software development world in the last three decades, is infrastructure and processes and know-how how to solve very complex problem as a large team, with the understanding that you will make mistakes and you have to solve them. What is the process of evolutionary getting to a better state? They don't have that in the other side. This is what we're trying to solve. We call them business engineers because we feel they are the perfect line between engineers and people who knows the business, who know the business. So I think that's a good term. And we're trying to give them the right tools, methodologies, and way to work in a sane way, because doing it manually, it's a recipe for failure.
So what these business engineers do is actually biz ops, right? That's the term which I am actually an INO ops or an IT ops. So what I do in IT ops is what these folks do in business, right?
Exactly.
Help me and our listeners to compare and contrast biz ops and DevOps.
Yeah, DevOps is a kind of term that has a long span, meaning it started from the migration of development and operations, but today it's almost like it's a style, it's a movement, it's a way of doing things. It's an understanding that there is a way of actually creating those processes, infrastructure, and everything. BizOps is today's just the term. There's not a lot behind it. It's just business applications. And there are different within BizOps, you get a lot of or few items like revenue operations that are taken on further, etc. But by and large, is a siloed solution. So a business operation person or a business engineer should be able to develop a solution on its platform, and it's a solution, and to bring it to production using a growing team, with the understanding that people will break things. You need to be able to test it and be able to automate all the way, or take out the human factor, the human error factor, all the way to production. And they're doing it on business applications, and mostly doing it using no code. This is sort of the realm of what we're talking about. But we believe, as Saldo, and what we're trying to push is the differences or the cutting between business operations and DevOps will start to blur. Because the way we look at things, once you describe it in code and you want to automate it, and you can use your SQL CI or you can use your GitHub Actions to actually move things around. So you rely on the traditional DevOps people to do that. If you want to do testing, you can start using their tools as well. So it will start to blur, and you'll start to see, we're already starting to see with some customers, places where your Terraform is actually morphed with your Salto representation. And once you have it in code, there's a lot of tools and architectures and processes to actually bring everything together.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
Great. That made perfect sense to me. I think I like that the conversation where it's going now. This might be a little bit of a silly question, but I ask it anyway. Is, in your mind, low code, no code a threat to the developer?
No, it's just it's. I think about it as like Python is not a threat to JavaScript. It's just another way of creating solutions. And the problem with the no code is essentially in the name. You don't have a code. And the code is an artifact that, beyond implementing things, gives you a structure, give you a way to follow up on changes, give you a way to, it's a language that people can share. It's in a way, if you're looking for analogies, like sheet music. If you have an orchestra and you want to make sure that people are talking about the same thing, you give them sheet music. If you have two people, jamming together, you don't have to have that. But if you want to have a very effective way, you have to have a language. So with code, it's easy. If you're using Python, everybody can look at Python, go to Git, look at what's happening, changes, revert things, can make themselves acquainted with what's going on. And, you know, you increase the level of knowledge, no longer tribal knowledge. When you go to the no-code part of the world, it's very much different because you have no language. And this is what we're trying to solve. The basic thing that we're trying to solve is let's give them a language that they can start sharing. Let's give them sheet music and they can start, you know, playing together as, you know, larger teams.
Yeah, makes sense. So for us at the DevOps Institute, skills and reskilling and upskilling, of course, is essential. There's a lot of folks right now who are, as we know, either call it the great reshuffle or call it the great resignation. I rather call it the great reshuffle because I think people are starting to change positions for whatever reasons. So if I wanted to be from a DevOps engineer, if I wanted to become a BizOps or a business engineer, what kind of skills does this individual need? What would you recommend that person to go look at?
So I don't think there's a skill, a DevOps skill. Usually a DevOps engineer will be, I'm a DevOps engineer and I'm dealing with AWS Lambda, or I have an expertise. I'm categorizing, I live in the DevOps group, but I have expertise. It's very similar here because my expertise could be, I'm a Salesforce engineer. So I know how to handle Salesforce. The processes and tools I'm using is key into DevOps. So once I'm done doing my stuff, I fetch them as I described before. I create a PR, a pull request, and from there on, the automation will take care of it. But my expertise is geared towards more the system or what I'm trying to do. This is why I'm a business engineer. So the DevOps part of things is about how the organization create the processes, tools, and infrastructure. My expertise relies on what I'm doing the day to day.
A little bit of a side question. It makes me think of, you know, companies like SAP and the none. Well, they're, as we know, they're shifting to the cloud as well. But does Salto also address those type of business applications which are non-SaaS?
We have customer requesting that. We're still a startup. It's hard for us to expand beyond. I'll tell you this. We're addressing right now cloud and the fast moving applications, meaning the cloud ones and the ones that have API. We will at some point go to on-prem as well if the market will require that. What we have is a very long list of customer requirements. Let's please support this, please support that, and we just go, you know, as the number drive us. But there's no limitation. Obviously, we can go on-prem. It's just a matter of what do we prioritize right now and what, you know, what's the go-to-market for us.
Yeah. That was a little bit of my industry analyst brain showing through. So I apologize. That was my curiosity in it. So to go back to the cause of our podcast, lots and lots of silos exist, right? And that's, I think, one of the biggest challenge. Now, I listened to a presentation at an event where a gentleman was saying that organizations should not eliminate silos. They should actually continue their silos. Now, maybe it's a bit of a nomenclature, right? I think maybe he meant to say there should be experts, but I thought he said silos. So I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on silos in the organizations? What do you see within your customers? I read, for example, the company case study you guys had on your website on Monday. I think it's monday.com, right? Fairly successful, no longer a startup. So they obviously done hiring a lot of generalists and they have a great success story. So for those who are listening in, go look at that case study. But give us your thoughts on silos.
Yeah, silos usually is a negative term. I'm trying to think of an example where silo is actually looked at as as a positive term. If you know, you should have expertise. Expertise does not mean silo. If you have silos, it means that you have overhead because you have to recreate everything within each silo. It means that you have to have a very strict way of handing over things from silo to silo, because essentially this is one organization, and you have to have NetSuite needs to work with Salesforce, needs to work with Jira. So you have to create that. You have different cadence between the silos, which means that if one silo decides to release one every 6 months and another silo decided to release every week, you have a problem because there's no way of doing that. Silos create a situation in which you have different quality requirement between this. There's no way of maintaining silos for long term unless you're really, really strict and you're a really, really big company and you're willing to spend a lot of money for no reason. If you take a look at what happened, again, we're trying to mimic in a way the IT turning into DevOps. IT used to be, so you used to have in the past, and I lived that. You had R&D organization, you had IT. You finished development, you tested it, you moved it to IT. And every 6 months, if you're really good, or every year, you could have another release. That was sort of a silo, and you had a very strict policy on how things move, and it was a pain. From, you know, we moved from release one every year. Now in Salto, we're doing a few a week. Mm-hmm. And it's not but because we're smarter. It's not but because we, you know, better people. It's because we broke the silos. We have better tools, infrastructure in order to do that. So I think the goal for each organization should be to break as many silos as you can, kind of have one organization for automation, one organization for testing if you need that, one organization for that take care of Git or whatever, and have the experts deal with what they're experts about. If I have an expert on Salesforce, they don't need to understand Git or need to understand release management. They need to focus on Salesforce. If you have the right infrastructure for that, once they're done, they move it on, someone else will take care of that, or the automatic process will take care of that. I don't see any value in silos, to be honest. I'm trying to think of an example while I'm talking. I don't have a good example of positive silos.
Yeah, I was with my colleague and we were looking at each other, absolutely disagreeing with a gentleman, because I absolutely agree with you. There is just a lot of, I call it a waste of time in organizations who have built these very, very entrenched silo teams. And there is also this NIH, right? Not invented here, or that finger pointing with, again, with DevOps, where we have blameless and kind of a safety culture that's starting to go away. We see an increase in collaboration and all of that. Wonderful. All right. Wow. Why is the clock always running so fast when you have a good conversation? And when you have a bad conversation, it feels like it just doesn't move. All right. We have two more questions and then I'll let you go back to your day and to your day job, of course. So if you think about 2023, and here anything goes, pick your favorite. Question are you asking yourself about 2023?
Yeah, there's, you know, beyond the macroeconomic climate,
right?
It's hard. It's I can tell you that I can shed a light on the, you know, the startup view on that, because we are a startup that grows, and when you're growing, you're trying to adjust. You're always trying to adjust. You look, you get customer feedback. Let's assume you lose a customer, you're trying to understand why, you adjust. That's what you're doing. You kind of read the market and you adjust. That's what you know how to do. This is what startups are good at. We can move really fast. The problem with the climate right now that it casts a long shadow on everything. So you lost a customer, you're not really sure if you lost it because of the product or you lost it because of they lost the budget. It's not always clear. So it slows things down. Everything becomes slower. Your ability to react is more problematic. You have to run few options like brand predictions in parallel in order to understand things. And that usually kind of slows things down. I think this is the biggest thing I'm trying to understand right now, trying sort of crystal ball when this, you know, the derivative will become positive again, so we can plan our budgets and everything towards that. I think this is the biggest thing for me to 23. How do we position ourselves correctly to still evolve? While understanding, you know, the effect of this macro climate. I think this is the biggest thing on my mind.
Yeah, I think you're speaking out of the heart of many leaders in and across the globe and in different verticals, software companies, non-software, et cetera, et cetera. Fantastic. All right, I have one more question unrelated to Salto. What's your favorite thing to do on the weekend?
Wow, I like riding motorcycles, strangely enough. Yeah.
We should meet up somewhere.
You ride?
Yes, I do. I used to actually do motocross many, many years ago. I don't do that today anymore. It's a little too dangerous. But what do you ride? What machine do you have?
So I'm doing tracks, track days. I have an Aprilia RS4.
Nice.
And I have an off-road one.
Nice.
I broke many bones. I have like the amount of scars I have. It's amazing. So I like that. And because of what you said, because of the risk, I'm starting to think about maybe bicycles is something I need to get back to as well. Because the two wheels is fun. So you need to figure out a way to break less bones. So that's my focus right now.
Excellent. Well, this has been a great conversation. I really much appreciate it. Our listeners are appreciating it. For those of you who want to know more, Salto can be found, much more information. Rami, thank you for bringing wisdom to us. Great, great conversation. Next time, maybe we do a little motorcycle podcast on how to hurt ourselves less, or maybe we shift the conversation to the biking. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that'll be amazing. That's much more interesting. Motorcycles are more interesting. Yeah. So if you can do that, that'll be great.
That sounds great. Let's think about that. Super. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day. And thank you again for everybody listening in today. Evelyn Ehrlich, Humans of DevOps podcast at the DevOps Institute with Rami Tamir from Salto. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.